You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 401. Welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White, recording for you here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. John, when I did the intro to this and I said 401, I shook my fist in the air as I said one, just like to wring all the frustration out of the one. And I don't know if that came across on the audio, but it happened.
Wait, you're angry at one? Because one is the loneliest number.
I'm angry.
And two can be just as lonely as one.
I'm angry at today. And I don't know why. I got home and my kids were just making this like screeching noise that lasted from like 5 until 8, and I think it broke me. It broke something in my head. So I don't know if I'm all put together or if my sorts are sorted or not, or if I'm just going to be a mess, but we'll see. If anyone's listening to this show, this is episode 401 of the Punk News Podcast. We had our big episode 400, which had been the last episode you would have heard, unless John snuck any extra weird bullshit episodes in between that. And now, please.
If by weird bullshit, you mean hilarious and amusing and insightful. Maybe I did. And maybe I will just out of spite now, because everyone dissing my hilarious and funny numbering system. Apparently punk is serious now. Apparently everyone's totally serious in punk rock all the time now and frowns at their shoes all day long. That's what punk rock is now, I guess.
Yeah, so speaking of what punk rock is, go do a survey. It's at orgcore.com. It'll help us figure out what this show will be. We may have made it sound like we were going to do 400 and then do the survey and then immediately change up the show, but that's not how time works. So it'll be the feedback will be incorporated a bit, but we want people to fill that out still. So yeah, orgcore.com, that's how you get there. Also joining me on tonight's show at Los Angeles, city of brotherly love, Mr. Ricky Frankel.
Definitely not the city of brotherly love, but
that's yeah. True. It's the sister of Hermanos Amor. La Ciudad de Hermanos Amor.
Sure. You know what? Good to have you guys back for a normal episode.
It feels like a while since we've done a normal episode.
I tried holding down the fort while you guys... Well, I guess you were sick, Adam, and I don't know where John was, but I held down the fort for 399.99999999997. And
and then last week we were supposed to record and then I got stuck at work, so that didn't happen. Yeah,
that's
okay.
That too. Yeah,
so anyways, yeah, this is normal. It is the normal time. We are recording a normal episode that'll have a normal amount of content and not a lot of crazy bullshit in it, and that's what we're doing. So John, in the spirit of us doing the things that people expect us to do, is there any mail?
Yes, in the spirit of normality and not normalcy, as people say, which didn't used to be a word, but then I think like President Ford used the word normalcy, so it became an actual word, but the word is actually normality. In the spirit of normality, you can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. This is from Jason. Jason says, in regards to NoFX, which we're going to talk about later, if you can't be crude and juvenile on stage, then it's almost like you can't be punk. Anyone knows NoFX doesn't really want people to be killed or shot at. And I think Jason does make a good point in that it's clear that NoFX wasn't being serious in their commentary, which I think a lot of people were actually overlooking, to tell you the truth.
I mentioned this on the episode I hosted. When I was at Punk Rock Bowling, I didn't see this go down, but no one was talking about it at all. Like, no one, I didn't hear anything about it the next day. No one cared.
We'll get into that later on. We've got a lot to talk about with NoFX, but this is from Meg. Meg just has one sentence, and she says, "More Adam White fan fiction, please." From Meg.
Oh, is that from your cosmic...
I can only she doesn't reference it directly, but I think the cosmic adventures of Adam White, I think it must be.
Has there been more? Is there any ambiguity as to what she was talking about? Like, am I missing a like a whole other sub show that you've created? Or
it's like when I went to Morrissey and I was sitting next to that young lady and she's like, I wrote a 24 episode show about Morrissey and Johnny Marr, but they were Mexican and living in London. And maybe that's what I'm doing, Adam. Maybe I've got a 24 episode series about your cosmic adventures, which honestly would be pretty cool to tell you the truth.
It'd be better if I was Mexican during the cosmic adventures.
I can make it happen. Adam Blanco. What's the word for Aventario de Adam Blanco?
See, it's already more interesting. all right. Yeah, cool. Yeah, John, that was impressive and scary and upsetting, that whole segment. So,
you know how long it took me to write that, Adam?
I don't know what a good or bad answer to that is. If it's incredibly short, then you have something wrong with you. If you spent an incredible long time amount about that, I really question your priorities in life. So I don't know what is the better answer.
I spent about maybe 120 seconds writing that literally before we started the podcast. I was quite proud. Yeah, I was thinking about Hawkwind all day, as I am one to do. And I'm like, what if I put Adam White in a Hawkwind-style adventure? And there we go. This is from Liverpool Neil, and here's what Liverpool Neil has to say. Hello, chaps. Liverpool Neil here. First, let me say, great job hosting Ricky. You did an outstanding job, and the whole show was actually a nice change of pace. Hearing the young Sean and the grizzled Tom on the same show worked really well. The whole thing flowed beautifully and was interesting, all apart from that one section where Ricky and Sean babbled about the hideously overrated leftover crack for what felt like 2 hours. But seriously, good job. But one subject came up that made me pissed off, Riot Fest. Are you guys seeing a different lineup than I'm looking at? This is the same old crop of bands that I went across the street to see if I was at the festival. Oh, I'm sorry. This is the same old crop of bands that I went across the street to see should be at Lollapalooza and not a punk rock festival. He's saying if he went across the street to see them and they'd be more likely to be a Lollapalooza than punk rock festival. I see about 4 bands out of 100 that I would be remotely interested in seeing, and that would make a nice club show for 3 hours, not a 3-day festival. Killing Joke, Fear, The Exploited, and The Avengers. Put that on a bill at Reggie's or the Metro and I'll be there. Put it this way, I'm not paying $100 to stand in a muddy field with 50,000 people to see The Exploited play for 30 minutes in the middle of the day. That is a good point, Liverpool Neil. That is not my idea of punk rock or fun. Sean, seriously, what is your excitement about this? I'd be way more psyched to see the show you are putting on in Downers Grove than this bloated monstrosity. And another thing, if you say that you... I love how he's like, and another thing, if you say that you have seen a band, but it was at a festival like this, can you really claim to have seen that band? You might have been half a mile away, and they might have played 8 songs while you were buying veggie tacos from hippie food truck number 5. I can guarantee that it would be a completely different experience if you saw them play a full set in a real venue. F Riot Fest and F all outdoor festivals like this. I am totally with Tom on this one. John and Adam, are you with me and Tom on the anti-fest bandwagon? Until next time, stay free, Liverpool Neil.
Well, thank you, Liverpool Neil. I appreciate it. I was I wasn't nervous about hosting, but I was a little concerned about how it would go, and it ended up being all right, and I'm glad you enjoyed it. Leftover Crack is not overrated. But we can agree to disagree on that one. As for outdoor fests, I enjoyed myself quite a bit at Punk Rock Bowling. I have no context for Riot Fest, but it looked like kind of a cool festival regardless. So that's it. That's all I have to say in response this time.
There was a fascinating point that Neil brought up in there that we should return to at some point. And that is that if you did see a band play on the other side of a field at a fest, did you see that band? Like, does that count?
Or you mean words like imposters, but they were so far away that you couldn't see?
Well, no, because I'm jumping back to like moments in my life, and I would question if I've like really seen a band. So, for example, we were like Warped Tour. Early 2000, maybe 2001, whatever it was. So Green Day was there, and we did not watch Green Day from the context of we didn't go get up in front of the stage and get in the pit and like really participate in watching Green Day. We were elsewhere, and at some point, I'm sure walked by the edge of their crowd and then stopped and gazed upon whatever was going on for a song or two, But does that count as I've seen Green Day or not?
Yes.
So
yeah, I think it does.
Because I mean, I could use that to a lot of, like, I can use that to make myself sound cool too. Because, you know, there's in my head, like, I've seen, you know, that's my experience seeing Misfits would have been in that kind of context, right? And it was the Marky Ramone Misfits, and I'm like, I don't know if that actually counts, come to think of it. But anyways, I mean, so come back to the question, big open air festivals thing. So over the past week, I was at one, but not really. I mean, I was at the Ottawa Explosion, which is one of these like multi-venue festivals, like a Fest in Florida style festival. And while there was a couple outdoor stage type things that were there, it was always like, you know, the parking lot of a bar had a stage in it, so you could go watch a band and you were technically outside, but there was still no more than like, you know, 100 people standing around during that. It was never 50,000 people in a field. And it's been a long, long time since I've done any of that. And given that it has been, and like the whole golden age of 50,000 person in a field, which I think we're in right now, I've avoided. So I guess I'm on Neil's side here, because my actions are going to speak louder than words here. That's not the kind of thing I usually go to. The biggest outdoor stages that I usually see are when they've like closed off a street in a town or something, and they're doing that kind of festival. John, you're not a big fest guy, right?
I'm not. I've been to, I don't know, maybe five big outdoor festivals. I've been to a couple punk rock bowlings. I used to go to the one in San Francisco, Treasure Island. And honestly, it always sounds better on paper. I've been to This Is Hardcore, which technically is inside, but it's kind of outside too. I went to the Pabst Blue Ribbon Festival because the Coat Hangers were playing. And it always looks better on paper than it is in real life. Like, you look at punk rock bowling and it's like, in prior years, it's like, wow, you know, Flag, The Descendants, Cockspar, The Dwarves. You're like, yeah, it's going to be awesome. It's going to be awesome. But I find that like, there's so much standing around between the stuff that you want to see. The time which you want to see comes on, you know, you're not quite as psyched as if you like went to a club show or whatever and just got to see that band kick ass, you know. Or even in the big context, you know, when I went and saw Alice Cooper, that was in the bigger context. It wasn't a festival, it was just Alice Cooper, and it was friggin' awesome. But that's just because it was just Alice Cooper. That gets 100% of your attention, you know. The other thing I've been musing the idea of throwing a punk news fest, and at this point I think I'm not going to throw a punk news fest that is, you know, more than like three or four bands, because I was recently at Philly Shreds Fest, which was cool. There's a lot of cool bands there. I was at Tsunami Fest last year, which was like a ridiculous, like it was like 60 hardcore bands in one day. It was like insane. I was at This Is Hardcore Fest the past couple of years. But I find that like online, you see people like, oh, I can't believe this band is really playing. Like some band no one's ever even heard of. Like a bunch of people like, oh yeah, this band's playing. It's going to be awesome. But then when you actually go there, the actual concert area is nearly empty the entire time, except for like the final headliner. And meanwhile, everyone else is just outside hanging out. Like for This Is Hardcore Fest, for Philly Shreds Fest, for Tsunami Fest. Literally, the outside non-music area was more crowded the entire time, except for the final headliner. So when you have like these smaller bands playing a huge venue to like 50 people or 30 people, like what's the point? You know what I mean? It's like it's just better suited for a club show. So I think I have to give it a two thumbs down to the big outdoor festival. A lot of people don't like the big outdoor festivals because it's not as intimate as a club show. I don't have that problem. Like I saw Flaming Lips at an outdoor festival and it was real cool. You know, I just think it's so long, so strung out, and so much stuff you don't care about that you're better off having a lot of awesome stuff in a short period of time than the same amount of awesome stuff or even a little bit more strung out across the day.
See, I think my reaction right now is very much rooted in dad concerns, which is that like there was a big Canada Day festival that was in Niagara-on-the-Lake a year or two ago. A Canada Day, by the way, for you guys, is it's like the 4th of July, except, you know, we're not putting people in cages or anything. Anyways, that was a bad joke.
It was a bad joke because it's real. You know
what I mean? I know. It wasn't really funny. You know what I mean? I know why I did that. sorry, kids in cages.
And what, did you just get banned? Are you going to get banned from? Are you going to get banned from stuff now?
Anyway, so there's a big Canada Day festival that was in Niagara on the Lake, which is like a very chic kind of winery town that's on the outskirts of Niagara Falls that has like lots of shops and little art spaces and galleries and theaters and things like that. It's very. I don't know what the American, what the exact thing is, but yeah, I'm sure you have these like little like picturesque storybook towns that are just like full of tourist shit, right? So it was one of these. It was out there, and it was a big festival that was in a field that was at a military base or something that is not normally an event space. But clearly they had this giant event that they wanted to put on. And I think, I'm trying to remember who was playing it. I don't know if it was a Tragically Hip was playing it, but I think City in Color was there. The Alexis on Fire offshoot, because they're really super popular up here. Anyways, a big, big music festival. And all I could think about was like, oh, how are you going to park? How are you going to park? How are you going to get out of there and park? And that's all I cared about. Like, that was the only thing that mattered to me. Like, lineup didn't matter. Like, it wasn't like, can I go to this festival? You know, should I go to this festival? What's the lineup like? I'm just like, oh no, the parking. How are you going to do it? That's all.
This is such fucking dad problems.
It is. That's why I said.
I mean, It's Not Dead Fest was one full day of awesome bands. Some stuff I skipped. But I didn't have dad issues. This sounds like an old man issue. I was sort of spoiled because they actually treated the press like we were VIP. So that was cool. And they gave us like free water and stuff, which was nice. But I had a blast. I mean,
that's totally, I think easy. That like, I have to divorce myself from like the logistics of going to the festival and then I'm fine. So like when I was at Explosion last weekend, like, I don't know, like we took the train into town and then just, you know, took the bus around. Like, it wasn't a big deal. We just made do. But if there was one in my backyard, I'd be like, oh no, where do I park? Like, as soon as the car's involved, I become a useless person.
Adam promised me they will never become a gotta be traffic style dad. You know what I mean by gotta be traffic style dad?
No, I don't think I'm that. It's, but there's, I can feel the, I can feel the voice. The voice is in the back of my head, like talking to me. But I don't go to extremes. Like, I don't, like, we'll go over to Buffalo and see like the Sabres play, right? And it's one of those things where like if they're losing, you know, everyone starts to clear out when there's like 20 minutes of the game left. And that's just, that always feels lame to me. I can't do that. I'm not that person.
Yes. Good.
So, anyways. Ricky is pro.
Podcast at punknews.org.
Ricky is pro outdoor festival, pro free water. John's anti everything.
I am.
I'm worried about
parking. I am anti everything.
That's there we go.
Podcast at punknews.org.
That's how you email us. Podcast at punknews.org. So, John, we have any more mail? Are we going to jump right into this thing? Are we going to do my thing?
It was recently 70s week at Punk News. Once per year, we do 70s week, and once per year, we do 90s week. We look, for 70s week, we look 40 years back. For 90s week, we look 20 years back. So we did a whole bunch of reviews from 1978. A couple of weeks ago. And I got to say, the staff knocked, Adam, I don't know if you checked out any of the reviews, but the staff really did knock it out of the park. I mean, this is our best year week to date so far. I mean, our review level quality was rising to and meeting stuff like Pitchfork, stuff like Rolling Stone, stuff like AV Club, and beating some of that stuff. Like, our reviews week was really, really good this week. All the staff did a great job of giving an academic course in the record, and also kind of explaining its importance and why it is a record that is worthy, I guess, to put in some kind of pantheon or to keep in people's mindset. So go check those out. The kids did an amazing week on 70s week. The question I have, I guess, are we going to go to 80s week once we're out of 70s week? And also once we're out of 90s week, what do we do after that? You know,
I mean, you do OOs.
Who cares about, I mean, does anyone honestly, like, does it, like, punk wise, like, were the two OOs like really that important for punk or even like rock, like Bush? Who gives a shit? You know what I mean?
Bush is what you jumped to. Holy fuck. I mean, my 80s week would be interesting only because it's more challenging than 70s week in my mind, right? Like there's
you can do hardcore stuff.
Yeah, but that's why it'd be cool. Like the
and Bow Wow Wow.
Yeah, John could write, yes, Bow Wow Wow. No, but like things get more a lot of the 70s stuff, not to disparage what anyone was writing about, but a lot of the 70s stuff is, you know, it's the confirmed classics, like it's the obvious stuff, it's his foundational stuff. But then once you get into the 80s, it starts to splinter and you could go off in weird directions that people aren't necessarily going to expect of you. So you get into 80s week and write about nothing but fucking goth records, and it would be a totally valid 80s week. Or you could write about, you know, tough guy hardcore in New York or whatever, right? Like there's all sizes of directions.
Or you could even do like stuff like Tom Tom Club, which is like New York punk, you know, like, you know what I mean, like New York art punk.
Yeah, so, you know? So the 80s is interesting. It's just that the you could, I would be worried about being too safe with it. Like if we did 80s week and then people picked up like the you know, the 80s Bad Religion records and they're going to talk about those ones, it's like, well, like we've talked about those.
Well, we got it. Honestly, though, Adam, I disagree with you to a degree, because for me, the point of the 70s and 90s, well, the 70s week really is, Punk News has been doing reviews for almost 20 years now. The problem is a lot of the fundamental reviews, like the early Clash stuff, the early Misfits stuff, it was the reviews written in like 99. And, you know, Joe Pallone famously did a parody review and it's like, yeah, man, I love the Misfits. If you don't like the Misfits, then you're effing gay. You know what I mean? Like really not worthy of the caliber that Punk News is at now. So when I started doing 70s Week, the idea was to make our reviews a resource for people that might not know about these records, and they can go online and learn about these records and their importance.
That's a valid point. So anyways, maybe it's 80s
Everybody's
week.
Valid.
There is probably something that happened in 90s week or aughts week. What do you call the 00s? I don't know.
Who cares? Like Len, you know, can't beat the Bum Rush. Who cares? No one cares.
I just feel that, like, sucks. Because Punk News was around during those times, it would just be a rehash of a lot of the stuff that our scene is sort of, like, made canonically important anyways. Like I don't need to see someone's glowing review of, like, Double Whiskey Coke No Ice, because we probably have four of them. So, like, I don't know why to bring that back for that kind of thing, but I don't know. We'll see. Do 60s anyways, week, right?
Next year,
nothing but like weird garage shit. Like you're not allowed to review Beatles records. You have to do like, I don't know,
the Meteors and the Astronauts and we call it Count Five, Strawberry Strawberry Alarm Clock, Chocolate Watch Band, Human Beans.
Yeah, we'll do that. Like I want to see like the Punk News reviews of like the Lollipop Shop and the Rats and all these like weird like Fred Cole like garage bands. Anyways, okay, so I'll play a song, I guess, and we're gonna jump into the news. There is a whole bunch of news this week.
Big news this week.
There's some controversial stuff, there's some stuff people were arguing over, there's some other controversial stuff. There's because we can't do this show without it, some horrible sexual crime. So there's you know, it's the full rainbow of stupid shit that we got to talk about,
of horror.
Yeah. So all right, so I'm gonna play a song from a band called New Vogue. Now New Vogue are out of Montreal. They are an offshoot project of the band Sonic Avenues, that is a Dirt Nap Records band that you've probably heard. Maybe, I don't know, they're good. There's a couple offshoots of Sonic Avenues that have been playing around in the past few years. There's a band called Priors that is basically like three of the Sonic Avenues guys and then the drummer from the Famines playing for them. But now there is New Vogue, which is I think a couple of them doing weird Sonic Avenues-ish sounding like basement recordings that are totally like spacey and blown out and pretty fun and pretty strange at times. It is actually, John, one of the first cassettes that I was motivated to go buy. So I bought a cassette, they shipped it to me. It sits here on my desk and looks at me and I look at it.
Welcome to the club, Adam.
And
welcome to the dark side.
I don't want to,
have you played it?
Yeah. I'm going to get a diversion here. I have not played the cassette yet. The cassette is, it is hand numbered, and I have number one. So fuck you.
Wow. That's cool.
I actually sat down before this show because I put my kids to bed really early because they were pissing me off. And I thought to myself, what am I going to do with this half hour that I've gained myself before the Punk News podcast? So I had this double cassette deck that I had stolen from my parents' house. That was like the deck that was part of my dad's stereo when I was growing up. Like, you know, when your parents had like a big fucking hi-fi where it was just like not a 70s hi-fi, but it was just like a stack of black boxes where you'd have like the receiver and then you'd have like a 6 CD changer thing and then a tape deck and then a record player and all this. Well, they had one of those stacks of things and I fished the cassette player out of it and I brought it home and it's been sitting here in my office for the longest time. And every time John,
what you got to listen to the Punk News mixtape for, which you apparently never set up, which offends me to a great deal.
Yes, and every time a new tape shows up in my life, it's probably one that you've made and I'm like, fuck, I should really go plug this sucker in, right? So I went and I threw it on a little table and I wheeled it over to where my turntable is. And I'm like, well, I guess I plug this into if I plug it into my like vinyl preamp, do I need that? I don't know. So I'm just trying to wire it into things. And it is clearly not in the greatest working order because I went and I put one of the Punk News, one of the lesser important Punk News tapes in it because I'm like, this could just shred one.
Oh, did it shred it?
Yeah. So I threw one in and I hit the play button and then it went bink, and nothing seemed to happen. And I hit the play button again. It went junk. So I moved it to the other, not up my cassette deck lingo. What do you call it? Like the other thing, the other
deck. It's called the deck. It's got two decks.
It's got two decks. The other deck, they put in the other deck. The other deck goes junk. And it's like, fuck. And then like, I managed to like through some subtle lovemaking for the buttons, all of a sudden it started to play it. But that all that means is that it started to make like this horrible noise out of my speakers. So I'm not totally convinced that that deck is in the right working order. So the battle continues. I'll get that figured out. I just need to go to a Goodwill and buy a fucking Walkman or something is what I need to do.
You can get a nice cassette deck for like $50 off Amazon.
Yeah, that might be where I go. Although, John, I was seriously sitting around thinking to myself, I'm like, do I need a duplicator?
why would you want a duplicator?
I don't know. I haven't figured it out yet. But I'm like, maybe I need
the three
one.
Duplicators.
Anyway.
I love you. They're so much fun.
You know what I really noticed? And I'm way off on a tangent now. Just being out at Explosion, like you really got the feel about where cassettes where they play in the ecosystem right now with a lot of these little weird kind of like underground garage bands and things like that, and that is that it's fucking expensive and takes forever to get vinyl made, and if you want to go and do something like wacky and on the fly and just strange and aggressive, like say this new Vogue tape, it does not make any financial sense to go get a 7-inch pressed of it. Especially if they're one of these like weird side project bands, like if you're going to get records pressed, you better be able to tour behind that and sell those things. Right. If you're just going to want to make 100 of something and sell them off a Bandcamp page, well, you're not going to do that with 7 inches. So what do? No one wants CDs, unfortunately, John. So
I know. So the best ones.
And inevitably, whoever's going to buy the thing is probably going to interact with the digital version of that thing. But they're there at the show and they want to give you money. And you know what? I was there and I got $7 in my pocket. I'm like, well, fuck it. Give me a tape, right? You get $7. I get this tape. It floats around my office like a fun little weird trinket. And that's how it works. So I get it. I get what it's for. I had a conversation with a label owner there. He was talking about like the prices of getting stuff done and how one of the bands that he was working with, they really wanted to put out a 7-inch. So he was going to go do that. But then he said that, like, you know what? He goes, what's it going to cost to like go put out a 7-inch, like when all's said and done, and I'm talking Canadian dollars and Canadian pressing here, but he said, you know what, like to get like 300 7-inches made, it might cost me like, you know, $1,500 by the time all that's done. Right. So then what, then I can like sell it. Then it cost me basically like $5 a piece to have these things made. And then what can I sell 7-inches to punks for, like $7, maybe like 10, if they're not going to be dicks about it. And he goes, and for like basically like a buck or two more, I can go get LPs made. And that really was more of the issue in their mind, was that like, it wasn't so much that it was expensive to get 7-inches done, like, which it is. It's more that like you don't get really a big price break between getting LPs made and getting a 7-inch done. And if push comes to shove, they'd much rather have an LP to be able to sell than the 7-inch. So like, there's that whole thing that comes into it. So like, tapes have like an ecosystem purpose. I kind of get that. So in any case, this is from a tape. This is from the New Vogue tape. It is called New Vogue. It is a 6-song thing. Came out in May 17th. I'm going to play a song called Parasite You Terror from New Vogue out of Montreal. Here you go. We're back.
That was a long intro.
It was, and I'm sorry, it was longer than the song. All right, so the first thing we're going to talk about here, there's a Bad Religion song that just showed up the other day. On the social media streams, it was just there waiting the one morning. No word in particular if it's from a record or if it's a one-off. I kind of get the feeling that it's a one-off. But in any case, it is called The Kids Are Alt-Right. It is, of course, a funny play on the Who's The Kids Are Alright.
Jack boots cracking on a polished floor. Redheads gathered at the liquor store. Your heart's race on a crystal night. Everybody grab a torch to light. Everybody needs somebody. Join the party. The kids are all right today.
And it is a song that was posted. And if you, the Punk News Podcast listener, wants a fun way to spend an afternoon, you could go read the Punk News comments about this song.
The YouTube comments.
Or the YouTube comments. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. The YouTube comments. That was the first thing that I did. I saw the song got posted and I was like, I want to go see what's going on YouTube about this. And it's not disappoint. It is a... it's poking God. The bear.
You know what this does, Adam? This finally solves the mystery as what Bad Religion thinks of people in the alt-right. Wow. Such a...
Yeah, it's...
I guess we can call this one a night. I think we're done here.
I was trying to figure out like what exactly its purpose was, right? I think like a lot of people were, because yeah, there's no question like where Bad Religion would fall politically, especially like compared to, you know, people that live in the in the nebulous white nationalist, white supremacist, whatever else movement, right? So look, that's never been a question. So like, so why the song? And I think on the one hand, it's because the title felt like too good to not do.
Okay.
Like you know, they're sitting around in the studio and then someone like looks up from whatever they're doing and they go like, "Hey Greg, the kids are all right." And then everyone has a laugh and then they go in and they bang something out, right? And I think
I think
that like that may be where it is, because it's not it's not the strongest Bad Religion song by any means, but it's a
really
really but it's not it's clearly not what they would, I mean, quality aside, it's not the kind of song that they would release as a single. Like the art that they threw up with it was just like, you know, like the title and the crossburster on it. Like it's not, there's no sign that this is like the first single from our new record kind of thing.
No.
Right? So,
no. Yeah.
So it's something that they, I don't know. I'm going on Through Together because the title is funny. And I don't know. I'm a little bit less offended by the quality of the song by the rest of the internet, I guess. I mean, it's like, it's structured like a box dance. Like it's like a fun little country ditty is what it's trying to be. And that's not what the universe is looking for. Like you looked at the title, I guess, and a lot of people were going like, "Bring on the righteous anger," and then like it was just kind of like a goofy little sing song, and I guess that's not what people are going for when they're
you know it's funny, I did not think like "Bring on the anger." I was kind of like, okay, I pretty much know where this is going, and then it went in the opposite direction. I thought the song wasn't written well. I thought it was just sloppy. The lyrics, I thought, seemed very rushed and forced. It felt like they were trying too hard to be edgy. Great, guys, you know who Pepe the Frog is, and you put him in your video. Like, awesome. I don't know what else you want from me. But I just thought, like, I don't care what the message or the lyrics were in this song. It just wasn't good. And I expect more from Bad Religion. I have reviewed Bad Religion, not albums, but plenty. I think they're the band I've reviewed the most when it comes to live albums. It's always been great, but I just really hope that this is not what we're getting on the next record, which we probably aren't.
I think it makes sense that it just showed up on Twitter one morning.
Yeah, I think that's right too. But no, I did not think this was good. You know, it's funny. This reminded me, this is like the cousin song of Robin Hood in Reverse, distant cousin from True North. And at least it was a politically charged song. You knew where they were coming from, obviously, but at least those lyrics were well written, and the song was tight and put together. I mean, the whole album is, but this was not good and sloppy. So I don't want to rep on them too much because we always get good stuff from them. But I think a lot from what I saw in the comments all over the place, Facebook, everywhere, it just seemed like everyone was pretty much okay with the messaging, but a lot of people just didn't like the song. And I think that's more than fair.
I like Rancid way better than Bad Religion. I like Descendants way better than Bad Religion. I like Green Day about the same as Bad Religion. But I will commend Bad Religion for this track. You don't see Green Day say, you know, well, actually, they did say no Trump, no KK, no fascist USA, but they ripped off NBC. You don't see Rancid taking a stand. You don't see the Descendants taking a stand. And I love the Descendants, you know. And so I'll commend Bad Religion, even though they might be stating the obvious, at least they're stating it. And now, more than ever, it's important to kind of take a stance against what's going wrong and what's going bad. Because things are going real bad, real wrong right now. Like Adam said, you know, they're throwing kids in jail. And they're losing track of who their parents are. I mean, this is disgraceful. You know, the president is disgraceful.
That was my.
Well,
sorry.
There's one thing I really wanted just to point out to John. The Descendants did put that "Who We Are" song out earlier this year, which, or maybe last year, but the 7-inch came out for Record Store Day. which also actually was not their strongest song.
Well, good for I mean, I'm not dissing the Descendants. I like it. I'm glad that Descendants are making a stand. But I think more out of all those bands, I think perhaps Bad Religion made the boldest stance, if you will, because you're like, here's a song. It's got a goofy title. I do think it's funny that people thought this was going to be Bring the Righteous to Anger when the title is upon itself. But, you know, it's not the greatest track ever, but it's not terrible. And it's kind of meant to be kind of a statement more than it is a here's the song that will, you know, symbolize what we are as a band. It's a statement saying we think this is bad. This is what we're saying. And we're going to be clear about it because quite surprisingly, even with bigger punk bands like NoFX, like Bad Religion, even against me or even the Descendants, there are people that are like, you know, far right in that kind of a thing. And so I am glad that Bad Religion is kind of putting message before the money and saying, listen, this is not right, and we're taking a stance against it.
You know, that was what I was thinking, and I was comparing it in my head to being a ska fan in the 90s, because that's my point of reference for everything. But if you like think back to, I remember I was amazed when I was first getting into ska, like the amount of anti-racist, I was going to say sloganeering, but that sounds derisive. It's not what I meant, but like the amount of like anti-racist content that was part of, say, like the Asian Man, the catalog back at that point, or what was going on with like Hopeless and Sub City and all those things. And there's a fucking, I'm sure I got it from Asian Man, like, no Nazis pins sitting here on my desk right next to me that I had from my ska days. Right. And I remember listening to a lot of those bands back then and thinking like, wow, like, isn't it weird how much these bands are all trying to fight the Nazis? Like, are there that many Nazis anymore? Like, is this not like singing about like the foe from World War II? Right? Like no one's, you never hear bands, you know, going out and putting together music where they're singing about like fighting the Japanese in the Pacific or anything like that, right? Like it was strange to me as like a shelter.
I think that would come off as really racist.
Yeah, right. But as a sheltered, super privileged white kid that was like not in a situation where I was encountering like any strife in my life or in the world firsthand, to hear all these bands at the time that were like singing about, you know, anti-racist causes and things like that, it was illuminating to me that like that was still an ongoing thing. And I just assumed that I'm like, okay, I guess like this is from the racist skinhead end of the ska scene. And I guess that's all it's about, is that we got to make sure that we say something, you know, to counter their ideas. But, you know, they must just be a weird little fringe group. Like when you were a kid and you thought about like what's a Nazi, I'm thinking of like, do you remember that, like the Michael Douglas movie Falling Down?
Yes.
Where at one point he gets captured by like some shopkeep or something like that, who turns out to be like some like perverse, you know, secret. He has like a secret Nazi bunker under his store or whatever. It's just like full of swastikas.
No, I think you're getting that confused. That happens in Pulp Fiction.
It's very similar to Pulp Fiction, like to the gimp scene in Pulp Fiction. Yeah, but that happens in Falling Down. And like, but that's sort of like what I would assume as like a kid in the 90s was like what a Nazi was. And it was just like, oh, there's some weird kook that lives in their secret bunker basement full of crazy shit. But it's not, you know, it's not a thing that we have to contend with in the rest of society. And it's like, well, lo and behold, it's a thing that we have to contend with in the rest of society these days. So there's a part of me that wants bands sort of all stripes just to say something, even if it's not super interesting. Like, you know, again, like the Bad Religion song here is by no means all that deep or interesting, but like, I feel happy that they were out there saying something, and I would feel like a lot better if you would get more of that sort of peppered among the contents that other bands are putting out, if for no other reason than, you know, I'm not so naive to believe that, you know, the people that feel incredibly, you know, aggrieved by their economic situation, that they're going to take on these kind of ideologies. Like, I'm not so naive to think that they're going to just be convinced that they're wrong, that we, because we tell them that they're wrong. But I do want them to feel the shame. Like, I want them to feel uncomfortable. I want when they go, I don't want them to feel so comfortable in that ideology that you can take one of these alt-right standpoints and then just go participate in the culture as if that's just the kind of thing that you are. Like, I don't want it normalized in the way that, you know, being a liberal or being a conservative is normalized, right? This isn't that. This is like you have an extreme ideology that advocates, you know, the superiority of one race over another. So I don't want you to just feel like that's, you know, that's your particular stripe of the political rainbow that you can embrace openly. If you do embrace those kind of things, I want you to feel uncomfortable having to deal with any of the media that the rest of us are. I want you to go put on, you know, something that you thought was, I don't want to say safe, but let's say was non-opinionated. And then all of a sudden in the middle of that non-opinionated record, there's some song that comes up that tells you that, like, the artist that you are enjoying thinks that you are wrong and reprehensible. And then I want those people to go back into their hole, into their secret bunker basement from falling down, and listen to fucking Screwdriver or whatever they listened to in the 90s. I don't want them out in the sunshine trying to be at the same thing that I'm at, because it's like it's a normalization thing. Like, I don't want people to become so emboldened in this toxic ideology that they start bringing it into the public square. Like, no, like, get back in the gutter, you fucking filth bag, right? That's what I want. So if little songs like this from Bad Religion, you know, can help that cause, then fine. And I hope that, like, the rest of the punk scene does that kind of thing too. I mean, it's pretty clear, of course, like someone say, like Laura Jane, like, you know where her politics are, but I want to hear her come out and say it, right? Mm. Like, I want to hear, you know, I want to hear the big artists come out and release their versions of this song, dumb or not, just to say it, just to go draw the line in the sand and say, like, hey buddy, you can be into this crazy shit ideology, but don't come to a fucking Descendant show because you're not welcome here, right? I want that out of everyone, because I think that maybe we need a little bit of that right now. So that,
you know, that's
where I'm going at.
You know, you got to give credit. Axl Rose said just that. Of all people, Axl Rose. What a crazy world we live in where Axl Rose makes more sense than the president, Adam.
Where are you getting Axl Rose news? Like, what are you tuned into?
Adam White, there's his website called punknews.org that generally reports on music.
On Axl Rose?
We didn't report on Axl Rose, but I'm aware of the general happenings in the music scene.
I don't know if that counts as Axl Rose anymore. What did Axl do, John? I'm just fucking with you.
He said, don't come to the Guns N' Roses if you like Donald Trump.
Yeah, and I'm not even saying that you need to do that. I mean, I'm trying to hedge here, because I don't want this to be so much like I don't want it to be like, you know what? If you are a Republican or if you are a conservative, then, like, fuck you, go die in a hole. I don't want to go that far, because, like, I recognize there's, like, people of different political opinions and different political stripes and things like that, and that's fine. But, like, you know, there's a massive gulf between, like, you know, the John McCain's of the world and the Richard Spencer's, yeah, right? And the Richard Spencers are just, they're a little bit too emboldened at this point. The fact that all of this putting kids in cages shit came because that ghoul Stephen Miller has the ear of the president is nuts. Like, that is the kind of person that should be in a secret Nazi bunker under a corner store that they own. And no one learns about their crazy Nazi shit until they die from autoerotic asphyxiation in their bunker, and then someone has to go down there to, like, de-rat the place.
Yeah, his son goes down there that never got along with his dad. Is like, holy crap, I can't believe it. I've seen that movie.
Yeah.
Isn't Stephen Miller Jewish?
He is, and his family thinks he's fucking nuts. It doesn't make sense. He is that guy. Ugh. Ah.
Wow, he's only 32. Wow.
Shall we move on?
Yeah, we probably should. I was worried about what I was going to say about that, and then I realized how angry I was.
Anger's good, Adam. Now is a good time to be angry. It really is.
Holy fuck, I'm going to go for a nap.
Let's talk about something that's reassuring, because right now the United States is in a state of tumult, and I'm getting a little worried, Adam. I'm getting a little worried. So let's go, for the time being, let's go back to something that's dependable, something that we can always count on. The UK Subs, they've released a cover album. It's called Subversions, after their 26 albums labeled A, B, C, D, and so forth. This is the 27th album or so. It's called Subversions. I dig the title. It's all covers. It's 12 songs. And we debuted the UK Subs covering David Bowie's Suffragette City. I thought this was cool and amusing and great. And I think it's interesting because David Bowie was only like 24 when he wrote that song. And Charlie Harper is like 74 now or something. So it's like Charlie Harper covering a 24-year-old guy. But it's like he's looking up to him, which I think is an interesting thing. Also, I thought it was we debuted it. And so I said to their PR, I said, listen, can I get a quote from Charlie Harper about this track? Because that'd be really, really cool. Charlie Harper making the punk glam connection and kind of explaining how punk, at least to a degree, evolved out of glam. And Charlie Harper's response was, I didn't really pick this song. Our guitar player picked it, and I just sang on it. We're both in the same area, so that's why I have a similar accent to David Bowie. Like, great. Anyway,
that's not helpful.
I thought this track was real cool. It's not mind-blowing or anything, but I just think it's cool that the UK Subs are still doing the UK Subs thing, and I think this is one of the better covers albums that I've heard, and I thought the track was earnest and good.
Yeah, this is a song that, is really hard to screw up in a cover. It's just super catchy. I thought they did a good job. I haven't heard the whole album, but I saw the track listing look pretty cool. So but yeah, no complaints here.
We totally on episode 400 were having some sort of pre-show conversation about why don't we talk about the UK Subs more, were we not? Or
we've been asked that a whole bunch. Like, I think we once had some mail come in asking if we were ever going to talk about older bands, and it's just that we talked about this a few.
Yeah, and I blame. Ago, like, yeah, I mean, yeah, you were on that conversation. Yeah, I blamed PR people, and then a PR person sent us this. So
it's the older bands that just don't have like the social media game going like that. I think that's what I said. Otherwise, I'd be posting them. I mean, I post Addict stuff, UK Sub stuff when I can. Adolescence, all the older bands we try to, but it's just like we need to find the info first.
And another thing about the Nazis, this was cool. I mean, it's one of those songs that has been covered so much by so many bands, punk bands in particular.
But it's Charlie Harper, Adam. It's Charlie Harper.
Yeah. I know. It's just that, and it's a song I love. Don't get me wrong. But it's just one of those things that, like, as soon as I hear it, I'm just thinking like the first 3 seconds, my thought is just like, oh, I wonder how they're going to do the false end. Can I just like fast forward to the end? I want to hear how they're going to do the false end. That's all I want to hear.
This was cool, and I'm always, I would say, bemused by the fact that a 74-year-old man is making harder, more kick-ass punk than most punk bands of 20 and 30-year-olds. Although I have to take that back a little bit, because I was at Philly Shreds Fest today. A lot of really young bands that were making some nasty stuff, which was cool. So I guess I'm always bemused that Charlie Harper, who's 74, is making harder punk than 30-year-old punks, if you will. Punks that are 30 and 34, 33, 32.
That was several years in the 30s that you listed there. That was helpful.
Charlie Harper's the man. Listen, Charlie Harper is cool. I hope he plays Philadelphia again soon. I will definitely be there. UK Subs are awesome. And the criticism of UK Subs that they've never really deviated from what they've done, which is, that's true. But on the other hand, they kind of kick ass still. It's like Motorhead. Like, they just kick ass. And when you invent a sound, you're kind of allowed to continue that sound and not deviate from that sound just because you're so important to the genre. And this is cool.
All right. let's move on here. We got one more quick story here, and then Ricky, you can hop in with a song. John, this is you one. You are the Weird Al has become one of your frequent topics. So I'll run the story here, and you let me know what you think. So Weird Al Yankovic, the parody guy there, he recently completed which was called his ridiculously self-indulgent, ill-advised vanity tour, wherein he and his band performed stripped down sets. They closed each set with a different cover, and Al posted a YouTube video that's like 26 minutes long that has a snippet of each of the 77 covers that they played. And it's all of like famous stuff. There's Sex Pistols in there, Ramones, Devo, The Clash, Alice Cooper, David Bowie. And all of the snippets, and this was, I guess this is maybe a John comment you snuck in here. All the snippets seem to be professionally recorded. So this is like off the board kind of thing. Not, you know, this isn't off of someone's cell phone. So that suggests that they might be used for something a little bit more.
Today just came out that you can listen to all 77 concerts in full on Stitcher, actually.
Oh shit. Well, there you go. So anyways, John, what do we have to say about this?
You know, I actually was not a huge Weird Al fan, but over the past like 4 or 5 months, I'm becoming a huge Weird Al fan. His albums are kind of tough to get through because how many parodies can you take? But I'm always a fan of someone doing something interesting and doing it with passion, and that's exactly what this tour was. This was Al doing like all originals or mostly all originals, and then each night they closed out with a different set. That's not a different encore. That's not an easy thing to do. But not only that, I was amazed at like how good the band sounded, and also like how Weird Al was so deftly able to manifest different styles. Like when he's doing David Bowie, he sounds like David Bowie. When he's doing The Clash, he sounds like The Clash. But those two artists don't sound like each other a lot. You know, like he was able to channel the spirit of those songs with genuine enthusiasm, from punk to like to 80s pop to like to stuff in the 50s. Like Weird Al is just one of these musicians, I think, just has music flowing through his body. And people might dismiss Weird Al because he does a lot of funny stuff. But I would actually argue that the smartest people I know have always, I've known three actual geniuses, I think, like legit geniuses, like Stephen Hawking / Einstein level geniuses. And all three of them really enjoyed comedy and jokes. And if you look at Frank Zappa, who was a master musician, he loved funny stuff. And so I think the fact that Weird Al is willing to be funny not only shows, and I'm not saying Weird Al's a genius, but I'm saying he's extremely talented at music. And that shows that his high level of talent, and instead of being, I guess, placed in a certain category because he does a lot of funny stuff, he really should be elevated because he's able to maintain comedy also while making incredible music that basically beats a lot of other kind of stuff. So I just think Weird Al is a fascinating person, and I think he really went the extra mile on this tour and with these covers, and I think the work speaks for itself. I'm just very impressed by Weird Al over the past 6 months. What can I say?
This is a fun batch of clips. I was really happy with how many Ramones covers he did. He must have done like two or three. I've been a Weird Al fan since I was, I mean, a casual one, I probably since I was like 10. I mean, he was ripping on and parodying such horrible songs that were originally horrible in my childhood, and just made them so fucking funny. And I remember just crying from his parody of Avril Lavigne's Complicated, and he turned it into Constipated. And when I was like 11, 10 or 11, I was in tears from laughing so hard.
That's hilarious. That is hilarious. When you're 11, like that kind of joke is like the funny thing ever.
Oh, it was so, so great. And Pretty Fly for a Rabbi was great. But it's cool. I'm glad he's just doing straight covers too. I've never seen him live. I'd like to.
I wish I went to this tour, honestly. I'm sorry I didn't. One thing, is Weird Al the nicest guy in music? Because you never hear anybody ever say anything bad about him ever. He's had his same bands since like 1982. Like, who has the same, who is a solo act that has the same bands for like 40 years? Like, I think he really must be like the nicest guy in music. He seems like a nice guy in interviews.
Nope, I ain't saying that about anyone anymore. Because every now I think that, they either end up, some horrible shit happens or they're dead, and I'm not going to do it. On that note, Ricky, play a song.
All right, so I've been meaning to play this band for a while, actually probably since January. But I keep finding other stuff to play, and this kind of gets mixed up in my list of podcast songs to play. This band is called the 210s. They're locals here. They're out of LA. They are a two-piece, and it's guitar and drums. I've seen them open for CJ Ramone, which was the first time I saw them, and then I saw them open for the Lillingtons back in late January this year, and they were really cool. They kind of got this like garagey pop punk thing going on, but they're cool. They've been really great openers. I haven't delved too much into their earlier stuff, but they put out a record called On Repeat. Let's see when this come out. I guess, was it last? Oh yeah, it was August of last year. They put out this record, and it's pretty cool. So I'm gonna play the title track from that record. This is On Repeat by the 210s.
Rule my world. Tell me what you want. Hold it in your hand. Baby, take charge. Play with me, tease me, chase me. Catch me, chase me, chase me. I want you on repeat. Can I have you on repeat? Want you on repeat, 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 repeat.
That was the 210s with a song On Repeat. All right, coming back to controversies and horrible things here. It appears that all of NoFX's currently scheduled shows in the USA are canceled, including the entirety of the upcoming Punk and Drublic Austin Festival, which had previously been rescheduled from May. In a recent Instagram post, Fat Mike stated that following the controversy over a joke that they made during their performance at Punk Rock Bowling, every NoFX show has been canceled in the US. The band did not drop off the shows. They were told that NoFX is not welcome to play any big venue in the United States. End quote. Meanwhile, people who had previously paid for the Punk and Drublic Austin tickets have been receiving email notifications that the entire event had been canceled over the last few days. So, yeah, you can find Mike's full statement linked over on over on Punk News here. Does it make sense? Should we read Mike's statement tier, and
it's pretty long, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, no, okay, it is. You should go do it.
Oh no. No, well, here, I'll read it real quick. F it. I'm not supposed to talk about it, but because of the comments we made in Las Vegas, every NoFX show has been canceled in the U.S. We did not drop off the shows. We were told that NoFX is not welcome to play any big venue in the United States. No joke. NoFX has effectively been banned in our own country. This is not our choice, but it is our reality. We are very sorry to our fans, especially the ones in Austin. For now, we are playing in Europe, Mexico, and Canada. The Punk and Drublic Festival is still happening in Europe and other continents. I'm trying my best to bring it back to the U.S., but a lot of people don't want it to happen. It effing sucks. We made a mistake, we apologize, and we got to suffer the consequences. Maybe it ain't fair, but whoever said life was fair? We are just very thankful that our fans are being so supportive. Thanks to all of you. See you all in Slovenia tomorrow.
Oh, boy. Well, so we talked about the main controversy on episode 399.9997. I mean, and I'll say this again, you know, when I was at Punk Rock Bowling, though I was actually at their set when the joke happened, I didn't hear anything about it until people the festival apologized for it. Like, no one was making a big deal out of it. I mean, NoFX is not exactly shy about making, you know, raunchy jokes. I mean, I remember when they were playing 72 Hookers, I believe they took a few shots at Muslims beforehand, and no one seemed to have an issue with that. So I found it very ironic that Fat Mike got kicked off his own festival. That was interesting. And then the latest news is Fat Mike posted today on Instagram that they're bringing Punk and Drublic to Canada in the spring of 2019. So that should be interesting to see if that still goes ahead as planned. But this is like, I don't know. Hopefully this is just, it's over. This has been just an exhausting story to follow. The comments have been brutal. This is the first time I think ever NoFX has shown any a lot of appreciation towards fans, or at least that much. And then what I said in the comments on the story, I'm like, if they're putting out that Ribbed Live in a Dive album out this coming month, I think, I forgot exactly when it's coming out, they should do a bunch of like small shows and just see and just do like and just to plug that album, and they'd be fine. It would be a really cool tour. It would be a really, really cool tour if they played like the Roxy here and Bottom of the Hill in San Francisco and like the Cosba in San Diego. Like, that would be a really cool tour if they did that all over the US. But I don't know. This whole thing has just been turned into such a huge blown out mess. I guess they just kind of have to go with the motions now.
One of the things that I think a lot of people missed in this whole underlying controversy is that pretty much everybody's in a jam. I don't think I heard anybody discuss this. I think what Mike said was in poor taste, but I don't think the band should be crucified or even that punished for it. It was a bad joke, but he's made lots of bad jokes. And, you know, I think this is just the flavor of the moment that people are seizing upon, especially since who's the guy that hired the hitman to kill his wife? That singer. How's that band? Help me out here, boys.
There's so many of them.
Yeah. The singer of the band that hired the hitman to kill his wife, that same weekend, he did a sold-out show, his first show since prison, and people loved it. So, I mean, I think hiring a hitman to kill your wife is a little bit more severe than making a tasteless joke. And so I think people are just seizing upon Mike because it's easy to seize upon him, and it's easy to attack this to, you know, kind of make yourself look bigger, I guess. But that's really not my main point. My main point is this: is when I first saw the comment from Punk Rock Bowling, I said to myself, that's so lame that they sold him out like that. Like, NoFX is, and I'm not even a huge NoFX fan, but NoFX has supported Punk Rock Bowling for so much, and they're completely selling them out. However, I thought about it, and Punk Rock Bowling was kind of in the jam because Punk Rock Bowling needs a Vegas license from Las Vegas to do its festival there. Obviously, the shooting from the Country Western Festival is a very sore spot for Las Vegas, and also it's bad for business and makes them look like they were ill-prepared to handle that kind of a thing. So with Mike basically insulting the city of Las Vegas like that, Las Vegas kind of has to like protect themselves, you know, or say, listen, we're not, we are a safe city. And also you making fun of people that got killed makes us look bad. So Punk Rock Bowling is kind of caught in a jam because they want to keep their Las Vegas license. Maybe they want to help out, you know, NoFX too. They really only have one choice, and they got to, you know, say NoFX are bad guys and we don't think that's cool and we don't want them back if they want to maintain the Las Vegas license, you know, which I think they kind of have their hands tied. And I don't necessarily think that it's Punk Rock Bowling's job to die on the cross for NoFX's bad joke. That being said, I do think that beer company that totally, like, you know, like I think the beer company really didn't even need to do what they did. And I think if the beer company didn't do anything, then that would have been the end of this and no one would have cared. I think the beer company saying, oh, well, we hate NoFX now too, you know, is really what took this from, you know, a level 5 to a level 9 issue. I think one of the reasons the beer company pulled out is because maybe sales weren't as good as they were hoping they were. But also with the beer company, it's like, you know, you've got NoFX as like your partners. It's NoFX, you know, it's not against me. It's not, Reviver. It's NoFX. Like, Tasteless Jokes is kind of 70% of what they do, you know? Why are you at, so they totally sold NoFX up to River if you ask me.
You know, John,
where was I going? Oh, God, what's that, Ricky?
Oh, I just wanted to say that I didn't think of the beginning of what you were saying, that I didn't consider that. And I agree. I think that's probably what happened there. So I think that's an extremely good point.
Well, thank you, Ricky. With regards to I'm almost done, Adam, then I'll let you jump in. With regards to NoFX is saying, well, we can't play any big shows anywhere. There's two big points there. First big point is that underscores how, if people say, well, how can you be banned from all big venues? Like, did the big venue president say you can't play there? The answer is yes, because most big venues are owned or operated by Live Nation. So if not, and Live Nation event was the shooting thing too. You know what I mean? So that underscores how much of a monopoly Live Nation is, even though Congress says it's not, which it clearly is. The second issue is, though, is, and the Melvin have talked about this, it's like, you know, big shows are really not the best shows usually. And if you're a real musician, you'll go play clubs and play a lot of clubs instead of playing a few big venues. And to a degree, that's true too. It's like, NoFX, you could play if you want to. What you're saying is you can't make tons of money doing a few shows. If you want to make money, you have to do a lot of smaller shows. So there's that too. But I think this will blow over eventually and everything will be back to normal in 6 or 8 months. It always goes to show, if you're not wrong, never apologize. And I'm not saying NoFX was in the right, but I'm saying a great thing to go by is if someone accuses you of something that's not true, you have to point out that it's not true and that you're not wrong. Otherwise, because usually when people complain about these kinds of things, they're not really upset about the underlying issue. They want to exact blood. So after you apologize, they'll just keep exacting blood. So if you're not wrong, don't apologize in most situations. Adam, I'm sorry for blabbering on. Go ahead.
No, I mean, I'm surprised and I'm not surprised that things got to this point. Surprised in that, I mean, they made a bad joke, but they didn't, like, that's all, right? Like, they didn't hurt anyone. They didn't cause any impropriety or anything like that. They didn't, like, so many bands, especially the so much of the news that we tend to talk about in this podcast is so astronomically worse than what they did as far as, like, how you treat another human being. And I'm shocked that this has had the legs that it's had, but it feels like it feels like a bit of a slow news kind of issue.
News was popping that week. Like, news was like super
busy. No, but I mean, right now, just like it, I get the feeling that like, continuing to attack NoFX for their stupid joke is something that people who are just given the state of, like, the world and politics and everything right now, I think it's an easy win, right? Like, there's a lot of crazy shit that's happening right now that none of us can do anything about. But you know what? Something that we can do about? We can give NoFX hell on the internet and make it hard for them to tour and stuff after this. And I think that there's a little bit of that in the not in the initial outrage, but in this like continuous perpetual outrage. Because like at the end of the day, it was a bad joke. Like if we go 10 years into the future and you're to tell the story of NoFX, and like let's say this was the end, they broke up, right? It would seem really bizarre that like, oh yeah, that this band that like had a career of doing, you know, some pretty gnarly and offensive things over the years. The thing that sunk them was they made a bad joke on stage that was super insensitive and
off the cuff,
mind you. And then because of the way that the internet is, it kind of got away from them and blew up online. Like if that is the end story of this band, that's going to seem pretty unbelievable. So this doesn't seem like the thing that should sink them. I wouldn't fault anyone for being mad at Mike for what he said or for calling them out or anything like that. Like, yeah, what he said was super inappropriate. Like, you know, have at him. But for this to still be rolling on as a controversy after all this time, I don't know. To me, it smacks of like, you know,
a crucible.
Yeah, like what can we do about the world? Well, I guess we can keep yelling at Mike, right? I don't know. Like at what kind of penance do they need to serve to get out of this hole? I'm not convinced that
they've done too much. If anything, they got kicked off their tour, then they got kicked off the Ohio Festival. I mean, it's and now they can't play any big theaters. I think it's completely overblown in terms of punishment.
I just like it's an easy issue at this point. Like everything's going to shit and none of us can do anything about it, but you know what? We can give NoFX hell still. And that's like, all right. Oh, that's one means of control that I guess you can enact over the world, but it seems disproportionate to their crime. Especially, I mean, even take politics out of it. John was alluding earlier in the show. You have all these fucking guys in screamo bands and whatever that are hiring hitmen.
That's him.
You know, outright killing people and all this. And they all, you know, they all sort of bounce back without a whole lot of what it seems like a whole lot of lasting repercussions. You know, Mike does no physical harm to anyone, but makes a really inappropriate joke. And that is the thing that becomes like the never ending sore spot. I don't know.
Well, I think it was Melvin that said it originally.
Well, it was a combo. It played off each other. There is such a thing as apologizing too much. You know, one other thing that I did want to mention, what was the other thing I wanted to mention with regards to this? I can't remember it, but yeah. As LA Dying was the guy that actually hired a hitman, well, tried to hire a hitman to kill his wife, and he played a sold out show that same night. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. One thing, I've talked about this before, but I really, really am sick of the mentality that if an artist says one thing that we as a group disagree with, then we have to destroy the artist or make that artist conform to what we want to hear. Art's purpose is not to agree with you. Art's purpose is not to make you feel good about yourself. It can be that purpose, but it doesn't have to be. The purpose of art is to expand your mind, challenge your brain, stimulate your brain, and make interesting concepts. And sometimes it makes you feel uncomfortable. That's the main purpose of art. Art does make you feel uncomfortable sometimes, and that's why it's important and honestly intellectually stimulating.
Yeah. All right, let's move on here. Ricky, jump into this next one. Tell the story.
Ooh. Okay, so this one I found late the night before, and I could not, and I was shocked. I couldn't believe it. It made me happy. It made me somewhat confused, but at least this was from 3 days ago while we're recording, but I said, last night, Against Me played a show at the Trumbleplex in Detroit, which I guess is a DIY venue, with former bassist Andrew Seward. Seward joined the band in 2002 and then left in 2013. He was then replaced by current bassist Inge Johansson. It isn't clear whether Andrew Seward is back in the band or not at this point. Against Me's last full length was Shapeshift With Me, which was released in 2016. And you can watch, I've probably overdid it with the amount of proof, but you can see a ton of Instagram videos, tweets with pictures, and there's actually a full video of them playing Don't Lose Touch at that show. And then I believe our photographer, Stephen McGill, was at the, what was it, the Three Something Festival?
The Three Stacks Fest, which is in Lansing.
The Three Stacks, yeah. Yeah, so they were there, and Andrew was playing with them there. So the rumors seem to be that he's back in the band. I can't confirm that. Again, I cannot confirm that, but this was very cool. My first Against Me show was actually with him, and then it was Jay on drums. So it wasn't the full band, but this is definitely close. I'm curious as to what happened with Inge. Everyone seems to really like Inge, at least in the comments. He brought his own sort of energy and high kicks, literally, to the show. He was at Punk Rock Bowling playing with them, so. It's kind of interesting. I wonder what's going on here, but this is cool to see them back together with Andrew. And I know they played with. God, why am I blanking on the first bassist's name? Is it Derek? I'll look that up in a minute. But they played with their original bassist at Fest last year when they did the full Reinventing Axl Rose shows. So this is cool. I don't know what else to say. I mean, Adam, what do you think?
I mean, I didn't get the impression that Andrew was back in the band for good. I figured it was like, you know, that they kind of had the opportunity and the schedules lined up and stuff like that, and they were playing this festival, so like, why not kind of loop them in? But I don't know. I haven't really heard too much one way or the other about it. I always want to say, is it Ing or Inge? Like, how do you?
It's Inge. And by the way, it was Dustin, their bassist from 2000 to 2002. My bad.
I always want to say Inge. For some reason. I don't know. I know nothing about how Swedish things are supposed to be pronounced, but I want to be like Inge. I mean, he was fine. He was doing a totally fine job. I mean, I appreciated a lot of the bands that dude was in before he joined Against Me. So it was kind of cool to see him with them.
Yeah.
I mean, given that he was from a whole other continent, you kind of got the feeling that like he was a high profile ringer. Like,
well, so just real quick, what's interesting is on the Against Me Wikipedia page, they put him in Inge under former members and Andrew Seward back in the current members. So, I mean, obviously we can't go, we haven't had an official announcement, but I don't know what to make of this anymore.
Yeah. So I'm not sure either. I mean, Andrew in my mind has always been like one of the faces of that band. And it was always strange to see him not on stage with them. And so, yeah, I'm not sure where it goes from here, but if you got to see him at one of those shows, then that was probably a cool little reunion. I wonder, what do we have any idea what their sets were like at these shows? Like, was Andrew playing the new stuff that he wasn't really a part of, or
you know, if you click through the Instagram videos on there, I think I heard some of the newer stuff. He was there for, I know he wasn't on the record, but I think one of the prior recordings. He was on Transgender Dysphoria Blues, and I remember them playing songs from that. I don't know if I don't know if they played the new songs, but I mean, I'm sure they told him to practice and like learn them. But I don't know. I don't know what else to say. I mean, it would be weird if they didn't play the newest stuff from their last record.
Yeah, people like the hits. So anyways, Andrew's back and Against Me. So I don't know. We don't really know where it's going with that. There's pictures on Punk News, though, that whole festival. They're really good. You should go check them out.
They are quite good.
What I like about Steven, who's our photographer that's doing these things, is that he very much has to live the kind of life that the rest of us have had to live with music, which is he has a day job, and it is not taking cool concert photos, but... Yeah. You know, he'll figure out how to like suffer in his after hours to make that happen and give it back to the world, which is what I think the rest of us do with a lot of stuff, just not, you know, in visuals. So anyways, okay, we had a couple crimes to move on to before we wrap things up here.
Quite the segue, Adam.
Well, that's what it's all about, right? So here we go. First of all, John's favorite festival in the world, the Fire Festival, spelt with a Y.
Fire!
The premium festival that was marketed towards high-income consumers and ended in debacle due to some sort of Jurassic Park Island situation. There's been a lawsuit that has come out of the Fire Festival.
Well, not a lawsuit, criminal charges.
Criminal charges, John. How would you tell this story? Because I'm bumbling over it.
Okay, so Billy McFarlane, who's the Fire Festival co-founder, was charged with international wire fraud and intentionally making false statements to the police. So they threw him in the slammer. He got out on bail. And he pleaded after he got out on bail. He pled guilty. Technically, the correct word is pleaded. Most people said pled, but he pleaded guilty to making false statements and wire fraud. And he's got his sentencing hearing for that coming up this summer. I'm not exactly sure when. However, I think the prosecutor kind of set this guy up to really give him the double whammy. I think he knew the deal. Meanwhile, while he was out on bail but awaiting sentencing, apparently it is alleged that he committed additional crimes. Basically, his company called up people that went to the Fire Festival and offered to sell them premium tickets to things like the Met Gala, the Victoria's Secret fashion show, and a private dinner with LeBron James, of course, at a premium price. Well, as it turns out, this guy did not have tickets to any of those events, and it was all a big lie and all a big dupe. So while he's awaiting sentencing for the wire fraud issue with the Fire Festival, now he's got new charges against him related to trying to defraud people with premium tickets. Adam, this guy just cannot stop committing crimes. I mean, he just can't stop. He can't help himself.
What kind of sentencing can you get for international wire fraud?
A lot. 10, 15 years.
Oh, I thought it'd be like 5. Okay.
No, fraud. I mean, fraud's a serious business, you know.
You keep hearing about these people that like get charged with, and a lot of the times it is like wire fraud is something that you get nailed with when it's one of these sort of like, you know, cross-border crimes, but it always comes out that you have not committed like one crime. You've committed like dozens of crimes. If you have the wherewithal and the drive to create a giant scheme to defraud people and involve like multiple, you know, financial entities and shell companies and whatever else, like you don't do that once. Like you make that your business, and
yeah.
And you get
honestly though, I think this guy actually like it, the narrative is that he got out of jail and went right back to his life of crime. I'm guessing that this guy has so much crap going on, he's not even aware of all the crap that he's got going on. So this false ticket thing was actually probably already existing before like even the Fire Festival debacle, and he kind of forgot about it, and now he's suffering the consequences of that, to tell you the truth. Unless he's a true psychopath, which he might be, you know. Or sociopath, I guess, not psychopath.
You know, I was reading the next story as you were going through that, and I was trying to come up with a funny voice in which to say sex cult. I was gonna try to make it happen with an echo. But then as I read the details of this next story, it's not something I should be making fun of because it's really fucking horrible. So
this is not a yuck.
No, it is not.
Billy McFarlane is funny because he's a knucklehead. This next one.
No, I mean, of all the sex cult stories that we talk about, which are many, that this one isn't really that funny. So, okay, there was a report that was written in the Daily Beast about William Francis, who is the singer of Aiden, who... What era of band is Aiden? I recall that being a band that I actively didn't listen to, but I saw around.
It's like 2002, 2005, something like that.
Yeah. They have 3 1-star reviews on Punk News. So, okay. So William Francis, the singer of Aiden, was allegedly the ringleader of a sex cult. According to the article, Francis physically and emotionally abused women, dislocated a woman's jaw, and gave her a black eye during rough sex, that's in quotes, used other women to entice young women into the cult, encouraged underage women to change his identity on their cell phones to avoid detection, demanded women send him large amounts of money, and even had women sign contracts in their own blood. According to the Daily Beast, the blood contract said, in part, this is a quote, his body is his, or sorry, my body is his. His is capitalized here, like we're talking about Christ. My body is his to use in any way he would choose. And I will never object to any actions he chooses to perform or have myself perform on him. There is no limitation to what kind of pain I am willing to endure for my master. Master is also capitalized. So Francis issued a statement replying to the accusations. He says, the truth is, I went into the police for questioning about these allegations earlier this year. After showing the detective my side of the story, including private communication, he recommended no charges be pressed because it was clear that the behavior was consensual. I have, in the past, engaged in heavy role play and bondage relationships with his all capitalized, consent. However, I do not engage in that sort of play anymore, and for anyone that feels as though I've hurt them or violated their consent, I am sorry, it won't ever happen again. And there are lots of things that have been said that are outright lies. I have never been with underage girls. I have never been involved in a, quote, sex cult, quote. So,
what is he doing in the bedroom that gets a woman's jaw dislocated? I don't get that at all.
Yeah, so
I'm thinking, who was that Canadian broadcaster that did some really bad things to women and got all the
Gian Gomeshi, oh. Yeah. I mean, Gian, yeah. I mean, Gian was, from what I recall about the charges, is like, yeah, it was another rough thing, but like, it was like a, like an asphyxiation kind of thing with him. If I'm not totally sure at this point.
I can't, like, these guys can have like almost like not any girl, but almost any girl they want, and they choose to like beat them up because of that. It's like, it's so messed up on so many levels. You know what I mean? It's like so depraved. It's like the most depraved of the most depraved is that guy from England, Fallen Prophets. But I mean, this is getting down there. I mean, these people are so depraved, and for what? It's like, these are sick people, and honestly, like, there's no way. Well, not no way, but I'm saying it underscores a problem that we have in, I guess, litigating these things or criminal charges, in that these guys are breaking women's orbital sockets. They're choking these women. They're beating these women up, and then the cops say, "Oh, it's consensual. It's consensual." I'm sort of the opinion that even if it is consensual, it still should be a crime, because no one should ever want to hit their sexual partner or the romantic partner or whatever, ever. It speaks to a very, very, very depraved and perverted personality of someone that would want to do that. And the fact that these guys can get off the hook because it's, quote, consensual is messed up, and I think it's bad and horrible, and these guys are sickos.
Well, I think in terms of like the philosophical thing you just laid out, I think you're also assuming that the person doesn't want to be hit, and sometimes people do in a weird
way. I don't think anybody wants to have their orbital socket broken. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, yeah, I mean, like that. I think it's just a weird line to draw. That's all.
I'm even saying that even if it is, quote, consensual, it still should be illegal. Like an example is, having wild animals is strict liability. That is, you're legally allowed to have a tiger on your property, but if he eats somebody, no matter the circumstances, you're still liable. That's a law in the United States with regards to wild animals. I think maybe that should be the law with violent, consensual, sexual role play, in that if you're going to slap people around and punch them and strangle them, if something bad happens to them, then you're on the hook and you can't get off the hook because it's, quote, consensual, because that's so easy to use as a blockage for, you know, like, oh, it was consensual that she wanted me to slap her around. How do you prove that? So this is so depraved and so sick that if that's consensual, I think you still should be criminally liable and civilly liable. That's my stance, Adam.
The best Punk News comment ever is under this article, which says, sounds like this guy and Gian Gomeshi should go bowling. First of all, if this guy has like a bunch of blood contracts that he's written with women, is that like a big heap of evidence that you were in a sex cult that you can't just deny on the internet?
Very good. Add the regular Columbo. Yeah. And one more thing.
It's like, yeah,
that's those blood contracts.
Well, one more thing. One more thing, Mr. Aiden here. the fucking sex contract. Like, I don't understand people, John. I don't understand why this is always... we always hear this about, like, the people that were the singers of these shitty emo bands. And is it just that we have not, you know, we have not heard about the sex cult controversies of the from the new wavers or the goths because we weren't tuned into their scenes, and just this no. happens to be the scene that these, like, late 20s skis bags are in, so we hear about their crimes? Or is there something about, you know, being in this, involved in this type of music that attracts these kind of people?
I have a hypothesis that I haven't tested or researched really in any way, and so
if that's the best time, I'm willing to say, just say it.
My hypothesis, like, you know, there's some dudes that, like, always have a girlfriend that's always paying for everything for them, you know what I mean? Like, different girlfriends, but they're always buying them stuff, you know. It's because that kind of guy knows how to identify a woman or a man that he can take advantage of and get him to pay for his stuff. They just have that sixth sense that some people have. This guy, William Francis, my guess is he's the kind of guy that knows how to identify someone that he can take advantage of and get them to do things they don't really want to do. And so it's not that this happens in all kinds of genres. It's that the type of fan for this kind of genre tends to be more vulnerable than, say, someone in the feminist punk movement, because someone in the feminist punk movement more generally is willing to stand up for themselves. You know what I mean? Or is more, I shouldn't say that, is more aware of threats out there. Whereas someone in the emo, you know, genre, maybe things aren't going so good at home. Maybe things aren't going so good at school. Maybe this person's been picked on a lot. This guy, William Francis, knows how to identify the most vulnerable of that flock and can exploit that. So I'm saying is the reason we see this more often in, like, these emos and terrible metalcore things is because a person that is more susceptible to be a victim of that is more likely to be a fan of that kind of music. So these creeps go into that kind of music, not even necessarily consciously, maybe subconsciously, but they go into that kind of music and exploit that avenue. That's my unproven hypothesis.
Good. It's unproven, so I can't say yes or no.
Also, climate change is fake. They're taking your jobs, and what else?
Earth is flat.
My wife wore a jacket that said "I don't care about you," but that didn't mean anything. Fashion models never think about what they wear before they go out. You know what I'm saying? So
I want to get off this ride, John.
Well, you got another 2 years and 6 months, son. You got a while yet. I've got another 2 years and 6 months, son.
Yeah, I suppose you got it more direct than me. I can just.
Honestly, I am getting kind of scared, to tell you the truth.
Well, weren't really you going to move to the Netherlands?
Yeah, actually, screw it. I'm doing it. I'm moving to the Netherlands. Netherlands is a beautiful country with pleasant people and delicious cheese and the world's highest capita record shops. It's John's paradise, Adam. It's John's paradise.
Did you pass the bar there?
No, I don't even know if they have one there, but I better get studying, you know.
John, you could become a tulip farmer. Like, you could go over there and just work the fields.
I don't give a shit, man. I'll work in the cheese shop. I'll squeegee the red light district girls' windows. I don't give a shit, you know. As long as I get to live in the Netherlands, I don't care, you know.
I had somewhere funny I was going with this, and I just let it die. All right, we got to wrap this up, John. You got a story about a band you really like? Bang that one out here, and let's
I can get to next week, but I'll cover it now since you mentioned it. Okay, Dog Party, they put out a new album. Dog Party are two sisters, Gwen and Lucy Giles. And Adam, I feel very proud. I am the first person to give these two young ladies a print interview. And now they're in their 10th year as a band. They are 21 and 19. And I first interviewed them when they were 11 and 9. And now they're putting out their sixth album. How many 21 and 19 year olds do you know have done six albums on actual labels? And the new album is great. And I'm so proud of these young ladies. I just think it's great. I think they make great music. And I think they're wonderful young women. And I think they've got a bright future ahead of them, Adam. What can I say?
But I mean, you said it, John. That's nice, though. I mean, it's cool that you can, like, have been like that involved, like seeing the band's career kind of like develop over the years and things like that. And, you know, that's great.
I first saw them when they were little kids, and now they're like in college, and it's like blowing my mind. You know what I mean? Like, they were little kids when I first saw them, you know?
We're going to wrap it up. If you want to send us email, podcast@punknews.org is how you do that. We will see you in a week.
This has been a Velour Underground production. I am Greg Simpson, producer of this podcast. Hit me up if you want me to mix, master, or produce your podcast, even from afar. Or you got a band you want to come record with me in scenic Lafayette, Indiana? Let's do it. Hit me up at Greg@VelourUndergroundStudios.com.